While women stunt doubles struggle for equal recognition in Hollywood, women in the workplace across America are facing challenges of their own. But instead of rallying together for a new women's revolution, working women blame their woes on themselves. At least that's what Leah Macko says in her new book called Midlife Crisis at 30, How the Stakes Have Changed for a New Generation, and What to Do About It. Macko says she and co-worker Carrie Rubin faced the same truths at the same time.
We were working together at CNN on the launch of a new show right after 9/11, which, you know, living in New York, obviously, was a very reflective time period. Even though our lives and our career trajectories were very different, we both felt a sense of narrowing in our own lives, and we felt a sense of being trapped in a sort of one-dimensional environment, very different than what we intended to be thriving in. And, you know, we really were kind of shocked when we sat down and looked at the ways our professional lives were eclipsing our personal lives very unintentionally. So we started to talk to other women, and we very quickly recognized that many of them felt the same. And then we started conducting some research, and we realized pretty quickly there were some dots to be connected that were really telling a new story of our generation.
I'm curious, I guess, about some of the details about the two of you to get a sense of what you were doing. You were, I assume, both right around 30?
Correct. We were both 30. Actually, our birthdays are a month apart. Carrie had worked at CNN for many years as a producer. You know, she was recently married and was contemplating starting a family and was wondering how a child would fit into her professional equation. You know, and at that point, I had been a very single-minded, career-focused single woman living in New York. You know, our lives and our questions we were confronting were somewhat different, but our sensibility and our observations about the way we were feeling were very similar.
This was supposed to be a problem that was solved by the generations that came before you. The women in the 1960s and 70s had broken all the ground, and you were not supposed to have to face this, or at least that was the way it was set up. Clearly, that is less than an accurate view of reality, but I suppose it must have been something of a shock to realize it.
Well, I think that the women who came before us confronted so much, and their issues were very different, and we owe them such a debt of gratitude. You know, we write this book with the word crisis in the title with the full recognition that we're the luckiest generation of women to ever walk the planet, and the women who came before us are, you know, those we have to thank for the opportunities we've inherited. But what we're dealing with are new problems, new collective problems. Yet we are very reluctant as a generation to see them that way. You know, we were raised with such an independent mindset, and, you know, we were so self-reliant. We've been thriving in meritocracies since we were president of the student council and captain of our soccer teams. When we start to confront some remnants of a glass ceiling, usually not until our 30s, when we're, you know, really ready for that next big promotion, or until some women are trying to combine work and family in a meaningful way, we are very, very unlikely as a generation to internalize any of this as something that may be, you know, a lingering social problem or a lingering shortcoming in a corporate or political system. What we really do as a generation is we blame ourselves. And that's what we saw with all of these wonderful women we interviewed, that really, irrespective of their impressive life resumes, their instinct was to question what they were doing wrong or how they were failing instead of looking at their problems in a more collective manner.
I'm curious, you know, you call your book Midlife Crisis at 30. What is it about 30? Why is 30 such a difficult year?
Well, that's an excellent question. And really, 30 is, it's quantifiable why 30 is a number of significance for women right now. You know, if you look at what's happened with women in the last 30 years, tremendous changes. And basically, timetables for the way we order our lives have been inverted. You know, 30 years ago, women were marrying at age 22 on average. And today, college-educated women are marrying, you know, many times at 28 or closer to 30. Also, 30 years ago, many women were having their first child before their 30th birthday. Those same women now, many are waiting until after their 30th birthday. And most significantly, the number of single women between the ages of 30 and 34 has tripled over the course of just one generation. So what you're dealing with is an entirely new set of circumstances for women in a very, very short period of time, and very important decisions about career, motherhood, earning potential made on a very, very compressed timetable right around 30.
You know, there's another interesting aspect to this. Not long ago, there was a New York Times Magazine cover story called The Opt-Out Revolution. Did you see that?
Of course. Well, I'm so happy that you asked about that because I found that article to be somewhat disturbing in the sense that it left you with the feeling that women have said or could say, you know, now we have it all. We decided we don't want it. We really want to be at home in our designer sweatsuits drinking our Starbucks coffee. And that is really not the story we're hearing. You know, of the over 100 women between the ages of 25 and 37 we interviewed for this book, not one of them said, oh, I have this biological pull. I feel like I need to be home. I need to be with my child. Absolutely, that's a valid choice for many women. And part of, you know, this evolution for women is that there is no one-size-fits-all definition of a successful woman. All choices and all options should be equally respected. But what we're really hearing is, I've been working for 10 years or more, and I like my job, and I would like to find a way to identify a way to maintain my status in my professional environment and be a great mother. Most women are really looking to do both, at least according to our research. And the problem is that if there are flexible policies, if there are some options that would allow women some time at home with their family, the reduction in status, the reduction in pay, the reduction in participation in meaningful workplace meetings is so great that they end up choosing to stay at home with their children because they really feel that's the choice they're forced to make.
So all of these women are happy to talk to you about the problem that they're facing, but why aren't they banding together and taking up the battle again? Where's the next feminist revolution?
Well, I think that all revolutions begin with testimony. This book, part of the goal was just really to begin this dialogue. And, you know, we've had a few very large speaking engagements, and the women in the room did start to talk to each other. I think that we've all been very caught up in learning how to compete and learning how to strive. And, you know, we look at each other and we think that everyone's life is better. The single woman looks at the married woman and thinks she has it all. The married woman looks at the single woman and thinks that her life could be glamorous and wonderful. And, you know, a lot of us, you know, are also so busy. You know, we have the longest work week in history. You know, free time has fallen by 40% since 1970. People are working very, very hard, very long hours. And at the end of the day, there's not a lot of time for all of this wonderful female bonding that you see on Sex and the City and portrayed other places in the media. You know, so I think that just finding that time and really finding a common purpose is the first step. And I think, you know, the opt-out revolution, even though I didn't agree with the thesis, it's provocative. It gets people talking. And I think this is a very good climate for the presentation and introduction of some of these issues.
Did you manage to figure out or get an idea from all these interviews that you did about where marriage and family should enter the picture for working women?
Well, I think one of the most important conclusions in the book, and you know, one of the reasons that we think that this book is very important, is that it really states very loud and clear that there is no one right answer to this question you're asking. That, you know, we have evolved as women so that our lives need not look like cookie cutter versions of each other. There is no white picket fence, three children before 30. You know, married to a wonderful husband who will support you, that is not the one identity of a successful woman now. You know, we very, very deliberately in the second half of our book called The New Girls Club, which is essentially a wink to the old boys club and really, you know, encourages women to create meaningful alliances inside and outside of the workplace. When we interviewed this really wonderful group of impressive, successful women from, you know, Oxygen founder Jerry Laybourne to vice presidential candidate Geraldine Ferraro to presidential advisor Mary Matlin to CNN's Paula Zahn to financial strategist Susie Orman. What we really tried to create was a sense of new role models that are more relevant for the world we live in today. And that means, you know, a story from Vogue writer Julia Reed about her first time wedding at age 42 and why she was so thrilled that she waited so many years, canceled her wedding at 29, made this choice, and it allowed her career to evolve in ways she'd never imagined, allowed her life to take flight in such wonderful ways. That's a new role model for all of those single women out there in their 30s.
Leah Macko is the co-author of the book Midlife Crisis at 30. She lives and works in New York City.